This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Drag Race Recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. I'm your host, Liana Boris, and we are here to talk about everything from episode 12, RuPaul's Drag Race season 14. We had another non-elimination week, but at least the golden chocolate bar is out of here as Bosco is saved via the Willy Wonka RuPaul twist. So let's talk about everything from this episode. And of course, we have our wonderful panel here with you today. First, let me welcome in Beth Dixon. Beth, how are you?
I'm doing well. I am happy that the twist is over so we can have the rest of the season, but it is not lost on me that it is episode 12 and we still have like 15 queens. So, knew this was coming at some point. Happy it happened. We can move on now.
Right. I believe this is 4 out of the 6 previous weeks have been non-eliminations, which just like for context, think about that on any other show, you know, because like, yeah, of course, it's great that it's like a longer season, but cast more queens, because in what season of Survivor or Big Brother would 4 out of 6 weeks with no one going home be acceptable? Like, it's just not.
Yeah. It's called Edge of Extinction at that point.
Right.
Yeah. And remember how much we all loved that.
Yeah, so fun. All right. Well, and of course, we have the fabulous Amon Adwan. You heard his voice, and I can't wait to get his takes on all of this.
Yeah. People were tagging us in a couple of tweets this week, which we love. We love the interaction with everyone listening to the podcast. It's wonderful. Please continue to do so. But I saw a lot of sentiment that, you know, having a longer season is better for the queens, because then that means more airtime, which means that they can, you know, seek more gigs outside of the show. I'm like, yes and no. Like, I think that having airtime is definitely a plus, but I think that you can still book gigs without a 20 episode season. Like, I think as long as you have a good presence on the show and you show out and you do the thing, and you play your cards right on social media and after the show, I feel like you can still get a good, you know, good showing on the, on the outside. So yeah, I look, RuPaul is going to get his money. We know this. And maybe I won't be so negative about the season being as long as it is, because ultimately it is great to have all of these queens get a chance to showcase their art. But in terms of an entertainment factor, it's a valid critique that the entertainment value will decrease with overexposure. Right. And the longer and longer that we are here, the less and less things we can say about these queens, because it's been 12 weeks. It's been almost 3 months. So,
you know, all of 2022, by the way, essentially. Except for the first week. Listen, back in my day when this show was on Logo, queens got booked no problem after that show.
No, I mean, I think it's like, I actually don't, it's not a critique inherently of longer seasons. It's a critique of the number of non-elimination episodes, because by bringing the two queens back at the beginning, six of 12 episodes, effectively no one has gone home.
Yeah. Right. The other part of this too to remember is that while it does help the queens who stay longer in the competition, it makes you forget the first few queens who leave even more so. Like, I totally forgot Alyssa Hunter was on this season until I saw her amazing runway for Mirror Mirror. And which, if you guys haven't done that, please check out her social media. She's amazing. And if you go to her show, tip her well.
But all of my Disney sensibilities were going off. I was like, yes,
it was so good. It was so good. But that's the point, right? To Amon's point here, like, having to be good at social media, that's really important. She's clearly good at it. to the point where she's like, if I was there, I'd still be slaying. And we're like, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
You would be. Yeah. I think that's the thing is that we look back. Oh, right. You know, June Jambalaya, Alyssa Hunter. Yeah. These are queens. Orion Story. Right. These are queens. And I think that's also part of it is because four of the six have been non-eliminations have been concentrated in these past 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so it's also like the same. It just feels so, there's no flow to it. It feels awkward. Like what other reality show does this? I don't know.
I feel like the storylines get very, they lose their oomph a lot sooner too.
Right.
Which I think sort of like contributes a bit more to some of the ire that some of these queens get. Like, there's like everybody, there's like so much controversy around Diabetti. And I was like, well, if these queens would go home, then maybe we wouldn't be seeing a diary room every damn episode of her complaining.
Mm-hmm. So. And here's the thing, right? I have been somewhat of a Diabetti apologist on this channel. I love that she says what's on her mind. I will continue to beat the drum that she can be a brat. But other than that, which is why I thought it was really funny that in Untuck, she was like, went in Camden and everything's like, well, I was coming off a little bit of fresh. And everyone's like, no. And she was like, a little bit. And I was like, that's fresh. That is fresh coming from Diabetti. But at least she knows what a brat looks like. But the whole point, though, is like it's creating drama within the queens and having certain storylines for queens purely because of no one going home.
Yep.
That should not be a part of a main storyline. It could be like one episode where it's like, darn, a queen came back, or oh my gosh, we had a double eliminate or double Shantae. And then move on. The fact that it's like this so many weeks, that's the part that's tiring. But I'm totally with you, Liana. Let's get more queens, have a longer season that way, and share the love a little bit more. Because God knows there's enough talented queens in this country.
Yeah, exactly. That's where ultimately I think it comes down on it. And, you know, they are producing a television show at the end of the day. And when you just feel the stagnation, it just it's tough. Now, that being said, we did have a queen go last week. We joked it would be funny if only one queen were eliminated in the month of March. The cards saith. So Jasmine is our only queen to have left and, of course, leaves the longest message, which I just wanted to mention before we talk about our main challenge. Of course, she's the one who like wrote this whole soliloquy. Like,
I would be such a petty bitch. I'd get up there and be like, I'd be writing in tiny little letters. I'd need four lipsticks.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, she asked for more lipsticks.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So look, I think let's move on to some stuff that's more positive. We obviously know our feelings about the fact that it's an elimination, but the bright side, like Beth mentioned, look, it's done. Okay. Mm-hmm. We know
it's over.
There better be no more non-elims, right? We're sailing all the way to the finale, hopefully.
I can't wait for finale night to have the top six. It's going to be great.
Right. But look, I think the queens really got to show off this week. We had the Rusical Challenge, which, as I mentioned, I was so excited as a huge Moulin Rouge fan. And at first I was like, okay, they're all RuPaul songs. I was like, okay, you know what? These queens are killing it. I'm kind of getting into this. Yes, by the end, I was having the best time.
Yeah, as into musical theater and musicals and all that stuff as I am, I've still yet to see Moulin Rouge. I know a few of the songs just by virtue of being in the, you know, the musical space. I haven't seen it. So I was like, I don't know if I'm going to have as much enjoyment with this because I don't really know the plot. But then when they literally just did a bunch of RuPaul songs, I was just like, okay, well, I guess at least with the music, I can still sort of like follow along with what's going on. It was fun. I definitely think this is probably one of the better ones because some of these musicals are bad, like just really bad. So
yeah,
I had fun with this one, and I'm so glad that what's his face got to make several cameo appearances.
Leslie Jordan,
yeah,
it was so good. I agree. I think this is a really strong one. Everybody really delivered, and I really do think that I like that the judging started off with, "Hey, we have to really split hairs here," because it was like hair splitting with who had to be in the top and the bottom. Well, I mean, I think it was kind of clear that Camden like stole the show, but other than that, I think everybody was super, super strong. My only complaint is why the fuck was this 12 minutes long? It was so long. I literally was like, got about halfway through and then realized I haven't even seen Willow yet. And then Willow came on and Willow did amazing. But I was just like, oh my God, it's not even nearly over. And now she's done with her bit and they're still going. I was just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That also is a testament to how much those queens had to learn and still fall off to that level. I feel like the musical challenges have been getting progressively longer and longer. Like, yeah, we're going to add 30 seconds here, 30 seconds here each season, which does show you like just how impressive this is. This is also, is this the first time we've had guest stars in the Rusical itself?
So Ginger came back to play Donald Trump in Trump the Rusical. That's the only one that I can think of off the top of my head. Andy Cohen's face was in the Conflama, the one Farmer Rusical, that one. Yep. But it was just like his face on like a thing that they were holding up.
Those and Michelle Visage did the like
the voiceovers. Bad bitches
of herstory kind of thing. But that was about it.
And the Madonna one, she did the voiceover. But I think, like, yeah, in terms of two sort of really active characters with Leyland and Leslie Jordan stepping in here, that's the only one that I
have to say, what a risk against the queens, by the way. Because, like, imagine you have to share the stage with Leslie Jordan and outshine him, right? Good on them for doing a really great job, because if you can't take that spotlight, you're in the bottom in that situation. So that's even more of an added challenge. I think, again, I think they just did really, really well. I also loved, it wasn't just like RuPaul, like album songs. Like they had like, you know, the UK Hun was in there. They had like, what was the other one that was like a group challenge number that they did that was, I can't remember, but there was another one that I was like, yes, oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a nice spread. Because we do we tend to see a lot of the same ones throughout the years over and over and over again being used, but there were some newer ones that were put in there and some ones that like some more obscure RuPaul songs that only like a real fan of Drag Race or just a fan of RuPaul's music in general. I don't know how many of those are, but you probably wouldn't know it unless you were like a fan.
Yeah, plus with the title being Moulin Rouge, it also then like kind of fits. So I was okay with it. Yeah, they put Jealous of My Boogie in French, which was like fun. I just feel like this is really well done overall. Yeah. And you know, the one thing about Leslie Jordan and Leyland being in the show was when they were not judges at first, I was like, that's a missed opportunity. And then they show back up in the show. I was like, oh, okay, thank God. Like, I accept that then.
But also, I have to give credit where credit's due here, which is we have had how many just absolutely horrific musicals and from a writing stance that, like, snaps all around. This was perfectly written. And Leland did that, too. Or not Leland.
Leland did that. And then, Miguel Zarate was the choreographer and Leslie Jordan was the director. Sorry, a.k.a. Miss Baby Wipes.
The best. I had no idea. That was amazing. Miss Baby Wipes.
The other thing that was funny was when they were talking about Leslie Jordan. This felt like such a generational thing because Bosco was like, oh, yeah, Will and Grace. And George is like, TikTok.
The way that I actively was like, no, Georges, please.
Well, now I understand why.
God. No. Go ahead.
Well, she hates musical theater also.
She does. I was,
betrayal.
Yeah, no, yeah, I love my little baby Georges, but I was like, okay, never mind. Then I might have to.
Did that feel like a personal attack to you, Aman?
You know, that is like the most played out excuse for not liking a musical. So not really. Like, I'm just waiting on somebody to just not like musicals for a reason other than they don't like people just bursting out into song. I'm like, but that's the point. It's music. And we all love music, right? So, it just was what it was. It's not a very hot take.
No, it's not a hot take. What I think was interesting is that everybody on Twitter was acting like she was talking about musical theater nerds, not musical theater itself. And I was like, if you watch, she's clearly talking about musical theater itself. She wasn't like, I don't like musical theater nerds because they just burst out singing. I'm like, which is also true. I do that all the time. But And everyone's like, did you feel offended by that? And I was like, no, like, you cannot like something I like. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, let's get into some of the nitty gritty of the Rusical here. So I think the first group that makes sense to talk about is sort of the Christina, Lil Pink, Maya, Lil Pink, Lil Kim, well, Pink, Maya of it all.
Before we do that, can we talk about
the drama of the
drama beforehand?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So Rue gives them the opportunity to pick their own roles, which, as Amon is talking about, led to so much drama.
Yeah. Let them pick their own roles. A lot of the queens seem to get what they wanted for the most part, because no one else really wanted what they wanted. I think Daya was able to get what Deja? She wanted. Deja was able to get.
Oh my God. That moment with Deja where Deja's like, so I was the only winner last week, so I'm going to get, I really want this part. And it's like crickets. It's like, you didn't have to fight for it.
I was like, we ain't going
to
fight you, girl.
The better way to go about that is like not pull the winner card until you need to, and just sit back and be like, I really want this. I've been very accommodating to other people. Is there anybody else who wants this?
You kind of already got your flowers for being the only winner.
Totally.
The prize for that was the whole episode and being able to sit there and watch the entire thing go down. So that sort of expired already, girl. You don't have to keep bringing that up every time.
Side note, am I the only one who doesn't have a blanket on me right now? I looked up and both of you have these comfy blankets on your laps, and I'm like, oh.
I didn't realize how in view. Hey, it is it might be late March, but we live on the East Coast, okay? It is cold.
It's true. This time of year can go from being winter part 4 to spring part 2 any given day.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So essentially, yeah. So like Amon mentioned, there's like some fights for there's very few fights. Was there any fights over the Green Fairy? I felt like everyone was like, no, it's Willow.
Somebody else wanted it. Angeria wanted to be Green Fairy or Talent, and then she didn't get either. Mm-hmm. Had to be.
She was Charisma. Yeah, which no one wanted. But she does fine.
So. It is so funny to me when they're like, no one wanted Talent. Nobody wanted Nerve. Nobody. I just think it's really funny. Nobody wanted Charisma. I'm like, bitch, that's the only thing that half the time that people win with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're doing what the producers want them to do, right? Because I have to imagine when they write these scripts, there are starring roles, and then there are roles that are sort of, they have the least amount of lines. They come out maybe towards the end of the show, and that's the role where either you fail with it or you come out and you do something interesting with it, and the judges get impressed because it's like, oh wow, you had a small part and you still overcame. So we know that the girls are going to want to read the script and then see which roles are going to be the roles that really land you in the hot seat and which ones are the ones that usually land you in the top or in the middle. And then you're just forced to fight over it. So when it came down to Bosco and Lady Camden, I mean, in the season prior, I don't even know if they've seen this season. I don't know if they were filming during season 13, but we literally just saw them do the musical last time. And Tina Burner was the MC, which is essentially the role that they were fighting, or that the role that Lady Camden did not want, literally just saw Tina Burner not do well with it. And that was like supposed to be Tina's challenge. So, of course, all of this anxiety about whether or not you're going to be able to succeed with an MC role, because it's a lot of pressure and there really isn't much characterization to an MC because all they do is push the show along. I totally understood like not wanting to take that part. And I did not like the fact that Bosco was like, we should make the queens decide, because it felt like she already knew that she was going to be able to overcome that way. And I'm like, well, no, fuck you. Everybody else got to get their part pretty much decided by the fact that no one else wanted it. So wouldn't the most fair thing to do would be to flip the coin? And I was so upset that they went ahead and like gave it to Bosco and didn't just go with the coin flip. Just go with the coin flip. Unless there was like some production finagling going on, saying, oh yeah, no, we don't have any coins on set. Sorry. We got to vote.
We don't have any coins. Sorry. What about, was it UK season two? Somebody had to audition, wasn't it? Or was it last season?
Yeah, no, no. We've had this before where if it's come down to two, they've like held an audition before. I have that memory
as
well.
I would have preferred that, actually, over that just like voting.
13, wasn't it?
Oh, God. It might have been, actually. I don't remember.
There's so many drag races. I used to be an encyclopedia and I just can't.
I feel like that was very recent. I feel like it might have been.
It was within the past like year, I feel like. Although I say that about most things, and Corona has really messed me up time-wise.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
But I kind of like the auditioning thing. I think I'm pretty sure it was last year in season 13, because it really allowed the queens to showcase what they've got. And then people were like, based off of that,
right,
this person was stronger at it. SOL.
Okay, yeah, it was 13. You're right. It was Rosé versus Denali. That's for the right. Social media Rusical.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes, they voted for Rosé.
And then Rosé won that, didn't she?
She
was in the top.
She was in the top.
I remember that.
Season
13. Anyway. Denali went home, and I'm just coming up with my own... Basically, I'm trying to make it this episode.
Last year, yeah, I mean, Rosé did win that week.
Okay, yeah. See, I mean, yeah, the producers
she won, and Jan didn't win the musical, but she won the musical. That was like a redemption.
Yeah. Oh my god,
sorry about that, Amon. Keep going.
The meta storylines of it all. I just really fell for Lady Camden here, and of course, the producers. I mean, the whole. We're seeing that the whole season arc for Lady Camden is being the quiet one, you know, the one that's not as outspoken, and then she has to learn how to fight for herself and how to stand up for herself and really just flourish and blossom. And this was supposed to be the moment that she was supposed to do that. And it pretty much the queen just said no to her. And there really isn't much that you can do to overcome that. Like if you lose by a vote, you lose by a vote. And there's like no amount of screaming and shouting, like, I want this pot is going to do anything. So. It worked out the way that it should have for her, but it was very frustrating to watch that happen.
Mm-hmm. I love when she said, you better own this role because I wanted it that bad. And then when it was like time to vote for who you wanted to go home, I wish that I know it's not in her nature. I'm also, I very much identify with her in the sense where like on the inside, I would have been like, well, I told her that if she took this role, she had to own it, and she didn't, so therefore I vote for her to go home. Like, I would have been so petty on the runway, but then I also would have been like her and been like, based off of critiques and alone this week, I guess I'll say Bosco.
Yeah, she, you know, Lady Camden does sort of end up, although Bosco doesn't go home, she definitely kind of gets that redemption there. So at least the episode kind of comes full circle. But I felt really bad for her in that moment, especially because last week I was like renewed my Lady Camden fandom, Camden fandom, whatever, from her lip sync performances. So it's like, oh, I wanted her to be successful. But Daya in that moment was being the drama, the producer of it all, being like, oh, I'll keep tally, and then causing the tied vote to make Willow pick. She was like, if I can't be in the center of the drama with Jasmine, I will create the center of the drama.
Mm-hmm. I loved that, though, honestly, because she knew that Willow is so good at keeping cards close to the chest. Like, I'm going to put it out there. I'd love to see Daya Betty play on like a Big Brother or something like that. Not because I necessarily think she'll win, but it would be very entertaining feats.
Yeah. There were a lot of like, especially because of the Survivor episode this week, oh, they're going to have to go to rocks comments, which I was kind of living for. But all right, let's jump into each of the individual roles. So I think we can sort of talk about the first group together, which is the like the little pinks of it all. So from what I could tell, Georges was like the Christina who played talent. Mm-hmm. Charisma was Angeria, the role that no one wanted, who was Maya, from what I could tell. Uniqueness was Daya, which was made after Pink. And then Deja played Nerve, that was sort of the Lil' Kim character. So they're the ones that sort of have the first number and kind of open the show. And I just had such a fun time. But I will say that it was kind of obvious that Georgia stood out because the critique of her face not matching her body 100% was true.
Mm-hmm. And how many times is she going to get that critique this season? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's not me trying to like come for her. It's I think that when she's in the moment, when she's lip syncing, like when she's putting on a show, she's much better at it. But there is still, and it's not even her whole face. It's literally her eyes. Her eyes, she's just not expressive. Even in like her voice self in the confessional, she'll be like this kind of stuff. But like her face really doesn't change the same, change that much. Her eyebrows go up a little bit and that's great. But I think that's something that now that she's on the show and she can go back and watch this and see potentially where she can improve. I think because you know they're going to bring her back for an All-Stars. Like RuPaul is obsessed with her. She's great. She's a great lip-syncing talent. Like, I think that she's one of the queens that's just going to grow from all the, you know, the critiques and such that she's gotten from the season and from the fandom and be able to just flourish. But I do think that that's her biggest thing, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as all of the critique that she was given about musical theater, I was like, girl, you could use it. A lot of acting is about your face. This is your canvas. It's not always about the hair and the padding and the fashion. You got all of that pretty much down to a T. Mm-hmm. You pick up choreography really well. You know how to, you're definitely a performer, but you do have to fix this. That's what really sells when you're performing in a musical. Like, you have to be big in theater. That's the whole point. You perform for someone that's all the way in the back row, not the front. So,
you want to know the best movie musical to watch one scene of to learn how to use your face and specifically your eyebrows in a very expressive way is The Producers, the Keep It Gay scene. It is. You have all these titans of comedic acting. You have Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, Gary Beach, Roger Bart, and all these people. And all they're doing half the time is just like doing random things, but it makes sense with their face. Just watch that scene and you'll get it. There you go. Best acting tips.
We'll be especially if you're going to be Christina. Like, Christina be making all sorts of faces when she be singing. Oh my God. There was so much comedy there. Like,
yeah.
You really went for it. I didn't see any of this. I didn't see any of that stuff. Like, come on.
Right.
Yeah. So the other queen that I, you know, obviously here, everyone gets critiques. We don't get a clear top and bottom, but based on the critiques, it seems that Deja was the other one, who kind of ended up in the bottom here. And I think I also sort of agree there that there was something that was lost. There were elements that were really fun, but I think her runway is really what sinks her into the bottom because it was choices.
Yeah. I've been seeing like, people talk about this runway saying that somebody, at least one of the queens said that the theme that they got was reflective and not mirror, mirror. So I'm so confused about what happened there because, I could kind of understand if that were the case because most of them weren't mirror, mirror. There were only a few of them that really followed that assignment and one of them was eliminated. So I'm like, what was the theme? What's going on here?
Yeah. I think so. When they get their props, it's not the runway theme. Mm-hmm. It's like a description of what the runway theme could be. And part of that is so that, you know, if somebody gets cast and they need to do an alternate, they're not going back going, well, I can tell you everything that happened or like what the runway theme is going to be. But they could give you a general idea. It's one of those things where I also wondered if like they thought it would be like iridescent or something because there was a couple people who had almost iridescent. I mean, Deja definitely did, but there was also other people who I kind of just got that sense like Camden, I almost felt like could have almost been iridescent. You kind of want to know what the brief said when they were preparing for this. But even without that portion, as a bigger person myself, I can understand the scrunching and bunching that happens with certain, you know, dresses and such as your skin's moving, it just kind of comes up. So it's just one of those things you have to be careful of. And I did agree with Michelle with saying like that was actually distracting. If you take that portion off and you're looking underneath, you're just seeing a lot of the bunching, which at the end of the day should not matter. Yeah. None of these things that we say should, but here we are.
But like, she just threw reflective cage and shoulder pads and a crown on this. And like, even that part looks cheap, which I don't want to like drag a queen for being like, oh, you didn't have a costume, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like even just a nude bodysuit underneath this, just sheer, would have been so cool. Like, you didn't need the dress. And then you even need less fabric because you already have your undergarments on. So I don't know. I just,
also having the cage kind of look and knowing how Georges did the cage kind of look is like, this just like looks so Spirit Halloween in comparison.
Yeah. But then, Angeria and Daya were also safe, it seemed. I was like, okay.
Cool, yeah, there. There.
Willow is the green fairy. And this to me was the Black China role, I guess. It was like the one where you weren't on stage for the majority, whereas a lot of the other queens were. You hop in, you have your moment. It is only your moment. It is 100% focused on you. And then you like hop out of that. And I felt like Willow did a great job with what she was given. Yeah.
I saw some editing to make her look a little better.
I agree. I was going to say, I kind of felt like you really didn't bring it in the first verse and then progressively better. But what I do know about these challenges is they run them twice and edit it together that way. So if you fall, for example, guess what's making the edit? Not the one where you didn't fall. They're going to show the one where you did fall. So I definitely felt like they took some of her best bits and put it together. She wasn't horrible by any means. I do think that her part was funnier, the way that it kept picking up and going.
She wasn't horrible, but she was definitely offbeat. And they would from the rest of the dancers, and they would cut the backup dancers out and just keep it on her, so you didn't have to see how off she was. I was like,
now we're gonna show Bosco just sitting there going like this, right? Yeah.
Like Jimbo in the back.
Oh, Jimbo's oh my gosh. Paralysis demon, I swear.
Yeah. Okay, well, speaking of Bosco, let's talk about the Saltine role. So the great Randy Newpo reached out to me on Twitter, and I have a question to pose to the two of you. So his theory is that it felt like the Saltine role was such a trap, because even though it was the lead role, it felt like there was nowhere to shine, whereas the other roles sort of had those elements. So, Beth, what do you sort of think about that?
False. I think that that had a lot of places to shine if you are an actor who understands levels, understands when you're quieter, when you're bigger, when you're, there's all these things. In the same way that Camden provided levels as the MC, I do think that Camden would have been able to bring this sweetness to the role. Bosco was one level, one face the entire time. So, of course, there's nowhere to go with it, because you didn't build in your own peaks and valleys in the performance. If you are given something that is seemingly monotone or doesn't have a growth or something, you create it yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's what distinguishes you from somebody else who can't do it. So I will never take that as an excuse as somebody who's done very limited, but acting and kind of training, because at the end of the day, even if you are given like the flattest thing, you can say, oh boy, I need coffee, like 50 different ways. Mm-hmm. So come up with that yourself if you can't get the direction for it. Sorry.
I completely agree. As a fellow thespian, it's all about how you portray those lines. And I just felt like there were so many moments, like the director in me was like, really, that's how you want to deliver that line? Like, that was supposed to be a funny line. You kind of just gave that away. The fact that she used her lip syncing performance as a means to get this role over Lady Kim was like, oh, do you think that she would have been able to beat me and swept away? I was like, Bosco, I don't think you want to use that as a trump card, because the only reason that you were in Swept Away is because you lost two lip syncs in a row. So I feel like that's just not the house of cards to build your argument on. And this role wasn't even like a sexy Diana Ross Swept Away role. Like it did, at least not 100% of the time. So I just felt like everything that she did even give us in Swept Away, none of it was really here. And either one that they did, whether it was the first or second one. So
like I just totally agree. I just think like you were playing the like I don't know, like the Sandy role from Grease or something, right? Like it's there's some edge to it here, but really if you're gonna bring some sexiness to it, where is it?
Where is it, darling?
Where
is the sex? Where are the hoes? Where is the hoe?
We had kind of talked about it last week with her being kind of awkward, right? When it came to like the sexiness of it all. And so I felt like this like translated. Yeah, I mean, I definitely at first I was like, yeah, for sure. Like, why would you want this? But I think it's because she did so poorly with it. And yeah. It's like, doesn't seem, because once I got thinking about it, I was like, oh yeah, you had the like the moment with the Christian character who Leyland played, that they had the come on camera angles, like spinning around them, mm-hmm. getting that shot.
I know they're really going for these Emmys, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't know how much choice they have over these things. Cause like, I don't know, for these types of musicals where it's like, you don't know if you're going to be playing that role. Like, how do you have the outfit? I don't know. I don't know how any of that works. Like Lady Camden had the like perfect ringmaster outfit. She had to have been given that, right? Like,
I feel like they,
some of the things are given. And then, I mean, you're also told bring any number of other kinds of stuff that could fit challenges. So it's not always about just runways, right? You always have to bring a bunch of extra stuff that you might be able to use. So I don't know. I very much feel like they probably were like, here you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because I hated this. I hated Bosco's outfit. It was so bad. It just looks so bad. And especially because, I mean, it's hard with like, being such a big fan of like Moulin Rouge, because like Satine's outfits are just to die for. They're gorgeous. And this is not that. So that was hard as well.
not her shining moment.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about the lady of the hour, Lady Camden, as the Zidler Mama Z role here, who really just was like, once Angeria is sort of able to talk her back into her normal self, just runs with this role from the get-go.
It was so good.
And I love that, because I loved how real Lady Camden was being about, like, just being disappointed about everything. And even in people coming over to her and saying, oh, don't worry, you're going to be good at it. It's like, you're just saying that because you feel good about what you got. So, like, you're just trying to, like, assuage your own guilt. But then Angeria was like, girl, I didn't want my shit either. So either you get it together now, get out of your head and deliver what's on the paper for this role, or you let it eat you up and then you end up in the back like Jan. So like pick one or the other, girl. So she used her ballet. And the choreographer gave her a lot to work with as well. So because, you know, like as you saw with Tina Burner, you can be on stage the whole time and give us nothing. But that was not the case for Lady Camden. So
I love that it's 2022. We're still coming for Tina Burner.
She does not own red, orange, and yellow. Okay.
Oh, man. But it is true. Like, watching her, I agree that when Ross said she could be on Broadway, I was like, yeah. That's the quality, because this for me wasn't like, when I watched her, I wasn't like, oh, I'm watching a RuPaul Rusical challenge. When I watched her in particular, I was like, oh, wow, I'm watching like PBS, like, you know, great performances of some show. Like, that's the level that she was able to perform at. There was the characterization. The movement was so graceful and professional. Her face was expressive. She clearly knew every single place in line, and it didn't look rehearsed. It looked like she's just going with the flow in the moment.
Yeah.
That's the biggest key. Everybody else, like there were like, even Georges, like who is also like, even though she doesn't have formal dance training, has been in the past pretty good about like, oh, this is just how I like move. And it looks like it's spontaneous. But even in this challenge, that was the other thing. And I think the face kind of gave it away, where I was like, now I step over here and I go like this with my arms. Like I even got that feeling from her. But I mean, Camden really just made it so easy to watch. Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah.
I'm so happy that she was able to get the win here, because to me, this wasn't even close. Like, good, give the other queens their praises. But this to me felt like the one winner here. Mm-hmm. So I think that Lady Camden absolutely deserved it. And I'm just happy that she was able to, despite all of the drama earlier in the episode of not being able to get the part that she wants, she was able to make the host role her own and really just excel to the end. So I'm really happy for her there.
I also think like a lot of the queens when they were voting were like, I just don't see Bosco doing this. And I actually could see Bosco doing that role, but I don't think that she would have done anywhere near as well as Camden. I think Camden was going to win regardless of whichever role she did. I feel like Bosco actually could have done that exact performance that she tried to do as the MC, and it would have worked better, because you can, at the very least, if you know all the words and all that kind of stuff, like, just have a passable job. You were on stage, you did all the movements, you did all the words, good job. Like, it's just when you are the ingenue, even in a RuPaul skit, and you aren't giving those levels, that stands out.
Well, I think let's talk about the question that was asked on the main stage, because I really just want to talk about Georgia's here. So, of course, RuPaul gives the infamous question of, who do you want to go home? And everyone but Bosco says Bosco. And Georgia's hits with the fact that Bosco was in the bottom 3 times in 1 episode.
She's like, girl, you're talking about track record?
Oh, my God. That was
Michelle's
girl, I loved that. But then that also got me thinking, how did Bosco have such confidence that she was going to rock this lead role, given the fact that, yeah, she was in the bottom 3 times in 1 episode for lip syncing, which is what you're just being tasked to do. So it's like the combination of those 2 things. It was like mind blown. Oh, my God.
Yeah, the bar erupted when that.
I'm sure.
It was like a slow build. It was like, because they edited it, because I'm quite sure Lady Camden did not smirk whenever Bosco got those like negative critiques. Like, they went over to Camden and Camden's doing one of these like like, I'm pretty sure that was probably about something else and they just edited it that way. But that was like the beginning of it in the bar, and the whole bar was like, oh. And then when they got to that question, and then with every time someone said Bosco's name, it was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, and then when it got to Georgia's and she read her like that, everyone was like, oh,
oh man.
Oh my God.
God, I love queer people.
Are insatiable. But yeah, it was she had to know that was coming. Like, I mean, if there are no feuds that are going on between any number of queens to like easily have them to like throw each other's names in the ring, it's always going to be the person that got the worst critiques, because everyone is going to go for the most political answer that they can, because it just is what it is. So that way they can come back and untucked and explain the reasoning and say it's because you got the worst critiques. So that way the fans, especially if it's against a fan favorite, they don't come off of the show and get on social media and get ripped the new a-hole because they're like coming after one of the better queens on the show. So I totally get it. I understood it. And yeah, I mean, Bosco should have gone home. So it just was what it was. It was pretty cut and dry this time around.
I mean, normally in every season, we have somebody who at one point was a front runner get eliminated before the final 4. Like, it's so someone who has a couple wins, it's not uncommon for them to go home. And so Bosco was almost that casualty, and literally was just the producers with chocolate who said, why don't you stay? Or I'm sorry, the universe. But the other thing that I need to go on a rant about with Bosco, so please allow me to have my soapbox again. I came to Georgia's, last week or 2 weeks ago for wearing very similar outfits multiple weeks. I want to send an official apology to Georgia's when Bosco has worn the same effing outfit like for 4 weeks in a row. And actually part of it really literally was the same outfit. Like, she reused some of the nun outfit in the lip sync episode. And now she's coming out here. So I'm with Michelle. I don't give a shit that this looks great, because it really does. It's the same outfit, girl, if you can't even give us levels in the performance, at least bring it on the runway. You're giving us monotone on the runway now. We only know you for one thing. And I do agree. Believe me, there's a lot I don't agree when it comes to Michelle and anybody else giving critiques of like, change your hair color, then that queen goes home or whatever. But I agree with her. Don't do the Bosco eyebrow if you're trying to play somebody who is not inherently someone that your character, your drag character would match with. Show us some versatility and then bring yourself out in the performance. You don't need to have the trademark all the time. So it just was like, oh my goodness. I just realized like how frustrating it is to see her just completely plateau at this part in the competition and just know that, oh, well, there's this safety net that I might not go home and I didn't go home last week and there might be a chocolate bar. Like you have to perform as if there's no safety net. You need to plan your outfits so that it's not the same exact thing 4 weeks in a row. That was just, okay, end rant.
I mean, they're not going to know, right, is the whole thing of what weeks it's going to be, but yeah.
I already had this outfit two other times.
Yeah, it's right. The same silhouette. I mean, it's the Bianca thing, right? Same dress, just different colors. And patterns on it. And yeah, I didn't really notice it until my friend pointed it out. I was like, she wore that last week. And I went and looked at all the looks. Yeah, I mean, it's
like actually exactly the same outfit, though. And that's what's so crazy. The Georgia thing, we were like, oh, yeah, it's like a panty with like a piece of fabric and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But at least that had different colors or like looked slightly different each time. This was like exactly the same. Except for this time, it was like, here's chrome.
I think at this point in the game, I think it's just unacceptable. It really is. And I know that I am not a drag queen, maybe one day. I know that like, it takes money. It takes time to put into your looks and to amass a wardrobe. I understand all of that. I know that it's not just, you know, you wake up one day, decide to do drag, and then you have a closet full of materials. It takes time. It takes money. It takes a lot of support from other people in the community. I totally get it. But if you are auditioning to be on season 14 of Drag Race and you know the critiques that often come on the show, the easiest thing for people to critique you on will be your runway look. You have to know. You have to look at your looks and be like, this is looking a little samey. I don't know how you get on the show and you don't think that. And there's no way that some of your looks get taken away and then you're left with, no, that didn't happen to you, sis. You just brought the same thing. And
you have a wall full of fabric in the workroom that you can make an outfit or add
and
to
this
outfit.
Queen. She's a New York queen, right?
Oh, she's a Seattle queen.
Okay, never mind. But still, I mean, if you know that you're going to go on the show, I feel like there are tons of designers that want their stuff on TV that always reach out to queens because they know that it's a chance for them to showcase their artwork. Let them know ahead of time, hey, I might be on the show. Do you got anything that you'd like me to wear? Come on. Like, there's got to be something.
And if you get there and you're having that like, ugh, I need to do something different here. This is a very kumbaya cast for the most part. They're really helping each other out. They're really lifting each other up. You can't tell me if she said, you know what, this is coming across a lot like my other outfits. I'm going to try to do something with a fabric to make it maybe cover up this portion a little bit more, make it like an asymmetrical like skirt to go with something or something like that. What do you think? And bounce some of those ideas off your sister.
Like if she gets eliminated, the what she packing is going to be very interesting because
I pack bra and panties.
Also this bra and panties. Look, I mean, it's tough because I think a lot of the discussion is like, well, we don't want queens to have money to come on the show. But also at the same time, like the level of drag has just been raised up and up and up by these queens every season. And so that just sort of like inherently becomes the norm. So it's really tough.
It's an unfortunate reality of it. I think long gone are the days of, you know, Michelle telling Chi Chi Devane, may she rest in peace. No. You don't need money, girl. Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. You do. You need the money. You need the access. You just do. And if that's not something that RuPaul would like to be a part of the culture of his show, then okay. Well, then don't put so much heavy, like no more rants about no more fucking H&M then, RuPaul. Don't say shit like that. Like, if you are okay with some queens being a little bit lesser in their career in terms of their wardrobe, then don't be so harsh on the critiques. And you know what? And people listen to what happens on Drag Race. People do. Like, this is like some people's only window into what drag is. And if the culture around this show becomes more, you know, less harsh about people's wardrobes, then that could change the perspective of how queens have to like get so glammed up all the time. Like, we need some more Adore Delanos on this cast that are like, I don't really fuck with all that corset shit. And I love the 90s grunge movement. And that's what you're going to get from me, girl. If you don't like it, then eliminate my ass. So like, I just feel like, yeah, like cast more queens and then cast more queens that don't give a damn about like getting all pressed up and prim. And if they don't want to do that, don't come on the, don't cast them on the show. Let them come on like Joey J and be like, you're not wearing a wig. You're not wearing a wig. Bitch, she told you in her audition show she doesn't, in her audition tape, she's not wearing a wig. So don't bring it up. Okay?
Oh, man. Joey J. I'm a gay ass bitch. I'm Joey J. Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, of knowing other queens who, like, not Rue queens, but queens who perform in the real world who are like, no, I'd never go on Drag Race. Like, that style of drag is just not my style of drag. Right. So it's like very narrowing in a certain style. And, you know, just because you're a great drag queen doesn't mean you're a great drag queen contest or drag race contestant, right? Mm-hmm. All of that can be true because it self-selects for this very specific type. So anyway.
That's why I will beat the drum over and over. Dragula is the superior drag competition reality show because they are very, very open about saying we are not judging your drag. We are judging your drag, how it relates to the challenges in this competition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even then, there's still issues there, but it's much more about, hey, we like they're better at breaking down. This is what you need to do in this competition. This is a way that you can take your drag aesthetic and elevate it. Like, that's not what they do on Drag Race. On Drag Race, they're saying, you have to fit our ideal because our ideal's correct.
This is season 14, okay? This is season 14. You need to already come here with that. It's like you know, back in the old days of, like, American Idol, where people would, like, come on there and, like, just be horrible at singing. And then they'd be like, well, maybe, you know, if I was on this competition, it could help. And they're like, no, this competition, people, like, already know how to sing, girl. And that's kind of what it is for Drag Race. Like, no, this competition is for people that already have extensive wardrobes, okay?
I was like, okay, it's well, true.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I'll say so. This too, to put some of the onus back on the queens. Y'all need to know how to sew if you want to go on the show. Like, please, for the love of God, you're 14 seasons in, learn how to sew. Learn how to craft something, even if it's not the most amazing thing ever. Because not even just for like the design challenges and construction challenges, but purely because if you do have a moment where you're like, I don't like my runway for this, or I need to zhuzh it up, or I need to do something, you feel like you have the agency to have a little bit more control, or I didn't have enough money for this outfit. I got to make it myself before I go.
And it creates so much animosity between a lot of these queens, especially if they're like, if you have like older guard queens that are like, all of these youngins, they don't know what the hell they're doing. And then you have somebody like Valentina that gets on cast on season 9 and she's only been doing drag for like a year.
You know, I just, you know, I go into my wardrobe, I have some wine, and then I just pick out whatever I would wear that day.
It's just like, damn. No wonder all these queens are like at each other, like, oh my God, you're not a real drag queen. What is this? Like, right, like in the words of the great Jasmine Masters, I am Jasmine Masters and I have something to say. RuPaul's Drag Race is fucked up drag. Bottom line, cut and dry.
She wasn't wrong.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, let's finish jaw talking about this specific episode. We do have a lip sync to talk about, and it is Heartbreak Hotel by Whitney Houston. We have Georges. We have Bosco in the bottom. But it kind of doesn't matter because although Bosco is eliminated, she has the golden chocolate bar. And I will tell you, Puya walked in the room and was watching with me at this moment. And I was like, the music's different. The music's different. She has the golden chocolate bar. She has to, because it just didn't feel the same when they were.
Yeah, the editing was different.
Exactly. Yes.
They usually only like go back to Rue one time. Like, they'll go to the chocolate bar, then they'll cut to Rue and Rue will be like, and this time they did that, and then they cut to Rue, and then they cut back to the chocolate bar, and then they cut back to Rue again, and Rue was like,
It was so dramatic. I did appreciate the just absolute pure response Bosco had. Like, that was really heartening. Mm-hmm. Paul was like, yes, oh, the drag gods have saved you.
Like, oh, so okay, girl.
I also love how you sometimes couldn't tell that it was chocolate versus gold because, like, the lighting, and it was like reflective the right way. I was like, wait, is it gold? Yeah, it's gold. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I was die laughing if they had cut to some kind of RuPaul cover of "I've Got a Golden Ticket."
I really thought something that was going to happen. I was like, are you going to like bring out like freaking Leslie Jordan in like a Charlie Bucket costume or something? Like, I would have lived for that.
So funny. I did also appreciate when they cut to like backstage after like the credits or whatever, and you hear the, or maybe it was in Untucked or whatever. And they go, Willow, tell Bosco what you said. And Willow was like, I was really happy for you, but I'm also really pissed.
Yeah.
Like, the one queen you never hear exactly how she's feeling was just like, I'm really pissed right now, but also happy for you.
Yeah, I don't know. My conspiracy theory also is like, it's the mirror reflective runway. Gold is reflective. I think it's just a coincidence. But anyway, it's done. The twist
As long as Ru is not like, and now the golden bar will be back in circulation. Like, no. It's over.
No.
We're done with this.
If you have a golden bar, that's fine. Just don't save six other queens before the bar. Like,
yeah. Oh, man. All right.
No double shot take. I don't care if it's Brooklyn Heights versus Evie Oddly quality and like way better than that. Only one person gets a say.
It's so funny. I'm just like thinking back because I'm like, our opinions. It was like, yeah, okay. So they saved all the queens because Cornbread got eliminated. That's fine. Whatever. Next week. Okay. So they had a double save. Okay. I assume that's normal. So the chocolate, blah, blah. It's just like us getting worse and worse and worse as we've moved along.
Yeah. Like, we keep having to like make excuses.
All right. Whatever. Okay. Anything else from this episode that y'all want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah. I was hoping that, like, I mean, usually the bar that I go to, they will, they don't play Untucked. They just cut the episode off, and then whatever queen is like hosting the event will like, they'll like have like a drag performance afterwards. But they kept it on just a little bit to see if there was going to be like any spiciness, but it was pretty much what I assumed would happen, was that they'd all go back behind and be like, oh, you know, I only said your name because yada, yada, yada. So Untucked was nothing really that spicy, but I still live for the moment that George just gave us. That was great. I wish I wish I had pulled my phone out and recorded that. Oh, that would have been so fun to have.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That was so good. She also did the thing, Beth, that you said Lady Camden should do, which was like, you really wanted this role. So, like,
I appreciate her spilling the tea, telling the truth there and saying, it left a bad taste in my mouth. This is the way you acted. I didn't like this. Because we have to remember that, quote unquote, the judges don't know what happens behind the scenes. I mean, Rue is an executive producer and like showrunner of the show, essentially. So I'm assuming Rue is very cognizant as to what's happening behind the scenes. But I love when they have those moments to be like, no, you know, Tyra's a bitch. Like, this is I love those moments.
Tyra's a complete bitch.
All right. So that does it for us. We will be back next week. Oh, God, what even was the promo? I'm trying to remember.
Roast.
Oh, the roast. Yes, the roast of, I think, Ross Matthews is what I saw somewhere. So we shall see if that's actually the case. But yeah, Georges will have to compete in the comedy challenge. We'll see how that goes. But
I think next week we say goodbye to Amon's team.
Yeah,
it's
okay. Just give me one last good runway look, Georges. That's all I really care about at this point. And then you can be on your merry way.
All right. Well, we'll see. Amon, what do you have going on? Where can people find you on social media?
You can follow me. Whenever my freaking contacts I'm taking. You can follow me at Amon Adwin on Twitter everywhere. I'll be playing Goose Goose Duck later on, but of course, by the time this is out, that'll have already passed, but you can check it out later on. I've got my Glee podcast with Matt LaGloria over at the Choir Room, and I'm still helping RHAP cover BB Canton. And that's it.
All right, Beth, what about you?
Same old, same old. You can catch me at AugustaWind11 on all my social media channels, as well as on Hot Mess Moments with Dylan Zahner and My Weekly Meltdown. All these Hot Mess Week Meltdowns, blah, 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 blah. I'm all there.
Okay, we got there. And you can follow me on Twitter at LianaRHAP, podcasting about The Masked Singer with Puya. We just wrapped up Group A, so that was really fun. And then next week, we're going to be jumping into a brand new group of contestants. So that's what kind of a cool thing about the format is. And then also doing the RHAP BNB with Mike Bloom. We just recorded today with Grace Leader, so that will be out. We talked about so many terrible tribal council moments, including, of course, the one from this latest episode. So check that out as well. For us, you can leave your star ratings and reviews on iTunes. That's always super helpful. Rob has a website.com/dragrace. And then I also want to put y'all on to a podcast that is starting back up for Temptation Island with Kirsten and Maggie. They are going to be back breaking down everything on the Hot Dummies on Islands feed. robhubsawebsite.com/hotdummies if you want to check it out. And essentially, Temptation Island, if you haven't seen it, it's like four couples who go back to test their relationships. And so Kirsten and Maggie are going to be breaking everything down, the filth, the outfits, the cheating, everything involved there. So you don't need to watch the show to enjoy it. It's one of those guilty pleasures. You can just listen to them talk about everything. They'll fill you in, and they will break it all down for you. So check that out. Again, robhasawebsite.com/hotdummies. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre for all your help behind the scenes, and we'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.